This is a Fred-friendly seminar, Minds on the Edge. So far, we've heard about the overwhelming difficulties of finding treatment for serious mental illness. In the 60s and 70s, the approach of warehousing patients in state hospitals was phased out. While this was an honest attempt to return people to their families and communities, it became an easy cost-cutting opportunity for legislators. Essential support services were never constructed, causing disastrous and even more expensive consequences. Families, courts, and healthcare systems have been trying to catch up ever since. Still, in cities across the country, there are community-based programs making real progress.
Crisis respite, hospital diversion in the community. These programs work.
Lauren Spiro directs public policy at a coalition of mental health consumer organizations. She advocates for interdisciplinary programs with teams of social workers, doctors, nurses, and employment specialists. They can follow people in and out of the hospital, jail, and homes. Sometimes they can even provide safe residential housing with peer support.
Rose House in New York is extremely successful. It costs one-fifth of the cost of a psychiatric hospitalization, and it's in the community. You know, there are alternatives. There are other solutions where we can retain our dignity and our voice.
Like the Housing First program that we operate.
Sam Simbaris began Pathways to Housing in 1992.
That fuses together very good clinical treatment services that are ongoing in the community with housing.
Pathways to Housing helps homeless people often rejected from other programs. It doesn't require its clients to be in treatment, but offers housing and extensive access to therapy, medication, and counseling. It boasts an 85% retention rate. All this costs money, and many of these programs are government-funded. Are we prepared to invest scarce public funds in people like James, our invented patient? Panelist Fred Fries has been a practicing psychologist for 30 years. He's also been struggling with schizophrenia since 1969. Our moderator, Frank Sesno, turns to him.
And these systems cost money, and people are reluctant to spend more money because they may look at a person like James and see that he's in and he's out and he's periodically homeless, and Fred Fries, that he's simply a lost cause.
Well,
isn't that what people might conclude?
What we ought to do with James is go up to him and say, rather than go to jail, I've got a job for you. Now, it's only 3 hours a week, and we're only going to pay you minimum wage, but you're going to be working with a lot of other people that have recovered from this stuff. We're changing the world here, James, because finally we're not going to be locked out. We're not going to be called nuts and psychos and wackos anymore. We're going to be accepted as fellow human beings, but we've got to work on this, and we've got to start somewhere. James, let's go with it.
Ellen Sachs, you hear Fred Fries say this.
I think it's fantastic. I think mental health professionals sometimes make the mistake that people with serious mental illness really need to lower their expectations. And I think in the beginning especially, we should be very supportive of people working and living up to their, quote, pre-morbid potential. It makes life better for them. It makes life better for everybody else. Sort of a win-win.
What we're talking about here is creating possibilities for people and operating with the assumption, instead of a disability framework, kind of a capability framework. And you offer people opportunities either to work or to engage in treatment or to reconnect with family, whatever it is. And you're speaking to people in a way that assumes that they can do things and let them tell you that they need help with it or not.
Judge Stephen Leifman, you serve at the Miami-Dade County Court, and you've created a successful health program for defendants with mental illness. What do you think?
You know, part of the old thinking is that we had treatment-resistant people. That's not true. We have treatment-resistant programs. And so we have to start to rethink.
James wants treatment.
But the treatment accessible to him is inappropriate for him.
Programs that work. Programs that work. Estelle Richmond.
Programs that have case management, where someone is actually feels responsible for helping people make those connections.
Lauren Spiro.
Well, I'm James now, and, you know, I just feel so hopeful. I mean, you believe in me? You want me? You think I can work? I can hold a job? My God! You know, I need that hope. I need to be reminded that I have dignity and that I'm treated with respect, and that just changes my whole self-image. I mean, I can believe in myself, and I can feel calm, and I can have a home and a job and be a member of the community. I'm excited and ready to go, but I need continued help and support.
This is a medical problem, and we need to look at it as a disease model, not a criminal justice one. What the problem with the illness is, people go up and down. It's not steady. So you need a continuum. So if they need hospitalization at some point, they get it. If they need community support, they get it. But that is not available.
So let's return to James's real world. James is on his own again. He may or may not be taking his medication again. The neighbors and the shop owners who see him frankly think James is a nuisance. He's eating out of dumpsters. He's not bathing. He is talking to you when you walk by him. Dr. Arthur Kaplan, you're a neighbor. What do you think?
Where are the cops? Why aren't they moving this guy? He's lousy for my business. He's bad for my property values. He smells. And you know what? I'm afraid of him. I don't want my kids around him.
Dr. Simpatico, you're his doctor. You've tried. James, who wanted treatment months ago, now seems to be slipping away. Now what do you do?
Well, if I'm working in the private sector, not much, because I'm almost certainly not going to be paid for my services. If I'm working in the public sector, which is likely where I would be encountering James, I would hope I would have available to me outreach teams and other resources that could help compensate for James's reluctance to engage in treatment.
By the way, the mayor just told me that a third of the budget of the city is being cut.
I got news for you. You're the mayor. Okay. So, Mr. Mayor, not only is your budget being cut, but your constituents and your taxpayers, oh, and your donors, are calling you. What are they saying?
They're probably saying that James doesn't vote, so you better listen to what I have to say. But
no, but that's very true. That's exactly. They're saying you already put money in that system. Look at the homeless population. I'm not going to give you more money. I don't think this is a nuisance. I think these people are dangerous.
Estelle, I know you've given me a lot of money. I value your support. But the reality is, this city is not going to be able to tolerate a bunch of people out on the street. It's going to give us a bad reputation for business. We can't have that. You remember what it was like here 12 years ago? We had reams of people wander around the street. We couldn't get anybody to come downtown, and no one would live downtown. I got to spend something.
But, Mr. Mayor, you're spending $100,000 a day keeping these people in your jail.
Fred Freeze, what's happening to James while all of this is going on?
James has been locked out by the establishment that is totally controlled by chronically normal people. No insult intended. We have these disabilities, we want roles in society, and we want to be acknowledged as fellow citizens in your community, Mr. Mayor.
If you want
not
me,
just avoiding us and say, put us in jail.
I don't want to avoid you, but I've got to build those jobs. You tell me how these programs are going to contribute
you
to my
You start us
effort.
Off minimum wage 3 hours a week. That's all you have to pay for these poor folks who are totally lost out to give them a little bit of hope.
Well, I might accept that. If that really is going to be cost-effective, I can start you down the road.
Dr. Eric Kandel, you're a Nobel laureate who studied brain science and memory disorders and mental illness. What do you think of this?
I find this discussion extremely depressing. When you think of the health gains that this country has achieved in other areas, it's really quite remarkable. People are living longer. Enormous improvement in public health. Preventive measures. The incidence of mental illness has not changed one iota in the last 200 years. The major reason for that is not just the social programs. They are disasters, and I grant it. We know so little about the biological underpinnings of this. If we could, by imaging a person or taking, you know, EEGs from them, determine whether or not this person is having a psychotic episode, we would be in a much better position to tell them, you know, you really have a problem that needs immediate intervention.
Many people are living longer, but I just want to say people diagnosed with serious mental illness on average die 25 years younger than the general population.
I agree with you. That's the point
I'm making. The system, the society is continuing to fail to meet our needs.
We know how to help most people with mental illnesses. We just don't do it because of the money. Now, you want to worry about cost effectiveness? Forget it, dude. I'm going to tell you it's going to cost more, but I want you to do something. You go under that bridge, and that's your son. That's your son. How much do you want to spend to help him?
I've had mental illness in my own family, and I know what that means, but you have to understand something. I hear stories about who's under the bridge, who's unemployed, every single day. I have empathy. This city, as you know, is undergoing severe budget cuts. You tell me to spend more, I'm telling you it isn't gonna happen.
I'm going to come to the mayor and I'm going to say, okay, I've heard you. And you know what I'm going to do now? I want to sue these people because the court is the only way that I can force people to do the right thing.
No, I would beware of the courts. I mean, I said, I mean, this person doesn't know much about the problem, so let's go to a group of people who know still less.
Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer warning that the legal system may not hold all the best solutions to our mental health dilemma. But are there constructive ways to use the law? We'll see as our fictional patients, Olivia and James, start to win their way through the courts. This is a Fred-friendly seminar on mental health in America, Minds on the Edge. I'm Cokie Roberts.